Secret Friends Unite!
Welcome to the Secret Friends Unite podcast, episode 470. This is your guide to the geek side, and we are recording in the beginning of almost summer, or spring.
Almost summer.
So
it's almost
we
the
are
season.
Getting ourselves... Yep, the grass is growing, the allergies are a pain in the butt,
yeah, oh yeah.
But we are here to talk about the world of geek with our friends, including my co-host, Charlie Garland.
I'm the friend. I'm Todd's friend. Oh, good evening. We are actually recording on a weeknight, which is not usually what we do, but we had a Comic-Con this weekend in Kalamazoo, Michigan, that we actually shared with my SFU Code 47 co-host Aaron, who runs a chapter that we helped him start in another part of Southwest Michigan. That was really great. We talked to many, many people. We raised a nice amount of money for charity, and we just had a good time. Love doing that stuff, but I tell you, the older you get, the harder it is being on your feet for 6 to 12 hours wearing boots because you're in cosplay.
And Charlie, you have the feet of a 90-year-old.
I do. I have a neuroma in one foot, and I just had an ingrown toenail removed on the other. Oh, I'm telling you, new feet. That's a great. You know what? That's a great thing that they do in Fallout, which you're going to talk about later, is the Jim's limb.
Not so great.
Jim's limbs, which cracked me up sideways, that they got a replacement foot out of a cardboard box. It was not a great. But anyway, we won't put the cart before the horse. But we're going to get this ball rolling. As always, when we do our show, we kick things off by paying some bills, by giving homage to the wonderful people on our Secret Friends Unite Patreon, which we call the Secret Friend Squad. I sound like Trump when I say that. I apologize. But anyway, the wonderful people on our Secret Friends Unite Patreon, which you can check out at patreon.com/Secret Friends Unite. You can find ad-free versions of our programs. You can also find awesome additional content that Todd and Mark and a host of our other friends produce, including our great show Spinnerack, where Todd and I like to talk about comics, and a show that I do where myself and a guest take a classic series and a season of that series and break down a few episodes called The Facts of Geek Life. All of our content is there, and it's available to you for 7 days for free. Jump on, check it out, and if you like it, I don't want to say my catchphrase at the end. I'm going to save it for the end. If you like it, I'll save it for the end. But anyway, we like to give love and respect to the folks on our Friends with Benefits level. That would be John Sedorf, the awesome Phoenix Sisters cosplay. Love those ladies. Brendan Myers, Corey HD, and Matthew Keel. Over on the BFFs level, the awesome Nias family of the Twin Cities, Sean, Stella, and Henry, and your friend and my friend, Missy Merchant. So again, patreon.com/Secret Friends Unite. If you like what you like, say yes, check it out. And then as Arnie said in Predator, when he threw that giant knife at that counter-terrorist, stick around. Oh, my goodness. Todd, January.
Do you need a breather there, Charlie? No. That was like a marathon right there.
You know, I've worked in radio. Todd, January of 1992. What was going on in your life? And then you were a junior in high school. I was a sophomore in high school. It was cold because it's Michigan. And at your local comic shop, you had the opportunity to check out Justice League of America, issue 70, written by Dan Jurgens. I met, speaking of comic writers from the 70s, I met Bob Hall this weekend, who is an artist who worked in Marvel and stuff. But I also met Howard Mackey, who was a bigwig at Marvel at the time, and he wrote Amazing Spider-Man for a long time. And he and I had actually a really cool conversation about that. But anyway, over at DC Comics.
Well, Dan Jurgens actually is a local of Minnesota.
Oh, that's right. You've seen him. You've talked to him.
Yeah, yeah. So him and I'll probably see him at a future show.
But at any rate, so he is writing this issue with a collection of characters that I'm a little fuzzy on. I see two people. This is obviously about Superman. This is around the time of the death of Superman.
Yeah, I can tell you all about this because I was just getting back into comic books.
But I do see.
And this is one of the books I actually looked to see. I have this book.
No kidding. All right. Well, I know that I can, before I kick it back over to you, I know that I can pick out If you're looking at the cover on our YouTube, the large blonde gentleman is holding the tattered, costume tattered, somewhat blood covered body of Blue Beetle. And that's all I got. Other guy in the background could be Guy Gardner if he's wearing a different jacket, but he's got a different symbol on. So from here, obviously they're grieving the recent death of Superman, as they are violating a court order from the estate, not the estate, from Elton John, stealing the name of his 1973 classic Funeral for a Friend. So, all right, tell me about what's going on here.
So this was a magic time for the comic book industry. The big story was, hey, we're going to kill Superman, and we didn't know who was going to kill him, and it was a huge lead-up to it when it was announced, and there was a series of books, and I own a bunch of them, the connecting stories before that are actually worth some money, and so, you know, we had The Death of Superman, which is the famous, you know, black polybag cover that people thought was going to be worth $1 million.
Oh, really?
It was
the one that I got for $1 at the Argos basement sale last fall. And he's having another one next weekend, and he probably has another 50 copies.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So this is basically after the death of Superman, there basically came the Funeral for a Friend, where people were, it was just like every comic had, all of the characters grieving for Superman. It was kind of cool. So a neat look at them, how it all impacted them. This one specific, Justice League America 69, which was before this, essentially this team fought Doomsday before he was discovered. He was like wearing like a weird suit. Nobody was with. So this is basically.
Fought him before it was cool. Before he was discovered.
Yes, before it was cool. Yes. So and so that's where it was. Right. So yeah, we got more of that, and we got the rise of the Superman, which, you know, which is so silly because like maybe one of them's really Superman. I'm like, yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
So
okay.
but going back to who's in this book, we have Blue Beetle, who's, you know, basically been destroyed. And everyone's wearing Superman armbands, but that truly is Guy Gardner in his leather phase.
leather phase. Okay. Yep.
Then we have Maxima, who is a hero I really didn't know at the time, but she's the large redhead, or tall redhead, wearing the green. Mm-hmm. And then we have Ice, who is mourning Superman, clutching his cape. And then we have another character. I didn't know who this dude was, so I had to look it up. And this is Bloodwind. He has basically an all-white costume, red cape.
Okay.
Yep. And he's actually an alias of the Martian Manhunter, John Johns. He actually would portray this character, and his ability was to fight heroes through using necromancy, so using the dead. So I don't know if he like turned Superman's body on and had him fight somebody.
His outfit is a head to toe or head to neck white body stocking with footies. He has a gold like thigh belt, and he has a matching wristband. And then he has one of those face masks that just covers everything but the face. And then his afro.
Well, I think it's all one. I think the mask actually is connected to the body suit.
It's kind of like Captain America has it. So, and then a big red cape with the Dracula thing in the back. You know, the
collar.
Yep. Thank you very much. Terrible costume. Collar, yeah. Looks absolutely dreadful.
Yeah.
But yeah. I will take. I was going to say, fun random pop quiz. Pick the outfit that you like the most out of this collection. I'm going to go.
I like Bloodwind's best. I think it's.
I'm going guy with Guy Gardner. I'd wear that. That's big shoulders. So anyway, you were going to say
for your leather fetish. Yes. Makes sense. This issue had like a cover, like half covered up half of the Justice League, and it said like Funeral for a Friend or whatever as well.
Okay.
So it was still doing like special covers at the time, but it was just paperboard. It was very weird.
Yeah.
I think that's the one I own, but yeah, they were showing versions of this. So there you go, folks. Weird. This is a big deal at the time. It was trying to resurrect DC. Shortly after this, it didn't work, and then we got Zero Hour, where it killed off a bunch of old heroes.
It's lather, rinse, repeat. You got to take out the trash, or the treasure, or the trash that is a treasure. Oh, but anyway, speaking of trash and treasure, down at the corner of Hollywood and Vine, where you're likely to find both, you will also find our senior news correspondent talking about Madam Web at 124 years young, bringing us the latest scoops. Let's get down there and find out what's going on.
Now it's time for Madam Web's rumors and news. Take it away, boys.
Thank you, Madam Web. The women's national championship just wrapped up.
Caitlin Clark, was that her name?
Caitlin Clark didn't win. Oh, yeah, Caitlin Clark did not win, but she's going to go on and make the most money in the WNBA. So, Madam Web, this is your opportunity to form the women's senior NBA, where essentially, senior. Because of your rejuvenated powers, you'll get like, you know, that you'll be the oldest senior to ever win Rookie of the Year. You will be breaking hips, making checks, and we'll be doing the under the leg shots from 3 feet away. They'll lower the basketball hoop about 6 feet. And I cannot wait until we see the geriatric generals out there.
Breaking lips and flipping shits. That's crazy stuff. All right, first story.
Sure.
What do we got, Todd?
Yes, so we're talking Transformers and G.I. Joe. There's going to be a live-action crossover film. The last Transformers film, which I spoke about during the summer, Charlie will talk about it in his version of the Geekeasy. Basically, that was the last film that we got the Transformers. And at the end of that movie, spoilers, folks, it's been out quite some time. Essentially, one of the agents talked to the main Michael character Kelly. Of the film and introduced an organization called G.I. Joe. You got to look out at a hangar and saw specialized vehicles. And that was the beginning of a new era in corporate synergy. Yes.
You saw
it's going to be live action.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, we watched it just.
So what did we see? What did we see in that scene? You had eagle eyes.
I did. We started it last night. We both fell asleep. So to be honest with you, missing a third of the movie is irrelevant because all you really need to do is watch the last act because there's lots of explosions and shit. But anyway, yeah, at the end of it, actor Michael Kelly, who you'll know his face. He's a grumpy old bald guy. Then takes our character, whose name is Noah. And says, well, we want to bring you into this fight we're having, you and your buddies. And he won't admit that he knows Transformers. And he pushes a button. He turns a plaque on the wall that says, like, best hero plaque or something. And the wall splits. And it's basically, it looks like the staging level of the pit, which is the G.I. Joe headquarters and the first part of the Marvel Comics series from the 1980s. Looks like, you know, level one staging area. You see a very generic, experimental looking, what you're assuming is an aircraft off to the left. And nothing, no other people, no other vehicles, nothing at all. It couldn't be any less giving anything away, and it was all CGI, so they were both looking at a green screen. No, it looked real to you? You thought it was real? You're shaking your head.
Oh, no, I mean, of course, what else would it be? Well, they're not going to make 85 real vehicles.
We're going to build this practical set for this 15 seconds of screen time. And then the movie ended. And then we got a mid-credit scene where he rebuilds Pete Davidson. So it's very exciting. As a crappier Porsche.
Of course. Nothing. Yeah. No one ever dies in films these days.
Well, how can they die? They're robots, right? So as long as you save the thumb drive.
Soul.
They have the spark.
You know,
they have
a spark, Charlie. They have a spark. Yes. So yes. And at this point, this has been long rumored that they were trying to build this. Now without a Michael Mann really leading the Transformers and multiple failed attempts with G.I. Joe. That's the hard part. Where is this going in regards to, is it going to be the same cast of Snake Eyes? Will it be a different humans involved with the Transformers? Because this was still set in the 90s. This wasn't set in modern times.
1994. Right, which is funny because 1994 is when G.I. Joe went away. So that's, I'm sure that's coincidence, but...
Yeah. So I guess we'll see what's going to happen. And I don't know, obviously... we could see, because in the main thread of the most recent film, it wasn't Megatron really, it was this other group and, you know, kind of disposable characters we didn't care about. But obviously they can then bring back Megatron, bring back Starscream, those guys as a threat. But in regards to Cobra, I don't think we're getting the other Cobra teams from the previous films. So, Charlie, in your thought process, what would make the most sense from a Cobra and G.I. Joe?
It's interesting right now because, as you know, the comic franchise is in a renaissance, which really just started late last year. We have this Energon universe where we have G.I. Joe or certain titles of G.I. Joe. Two of them, actually. There's a Duke series, which Duke and a Cobra Commander, which I believe may be both limited. They may be, you know, five issues in the end. Transformers is ongoing, and then there's that Void Rivals. Is that ongoing? But it's all Void connected. Rivals.
Yeah.
So it's like, it was kind of one big story. And then there's a standalone G.I. Joe series written by Larry Hama that is continuing what happened when the numbering stopped year and a half ago. And I'm still a little fuzzy on that, but I'll get there. But what would make the most sense? What you got to do with G.I. Joe here is start over. You know, there's nothing positive about what they've done cinematically. They had the first film. They didn't like the results enough that they killed off the entirety of the cast, with the exception of the Snake Eyes character, who is masked and mute and didn't speak. So they were able to recast it with The Rock and Adrian Palladecki and some other actors and Bruce Willis. And that movie was better, but it sucked still. Then the Snake Eyes film, if you want to hear what we think about that, that's definitely a Patreon to listen to a show I do with my wife called Bad Trip to the Movies with the Cardins, and that was the most recent movie that we tore apart. It was terrible. That was in 2021. So my vibe is that they're just gonna start all over again because they have nothing to really base it off of. It would be super cool if they kept the focus away from Snake Eyes, though I guess that's probably tough, being that that's the main character. Would be like, well, let's do one without Bumblebee or something. It's like you couldn't get away with it. But he's really, in a lot of ways, the only iconic G.I. Joe character that the average Joe knows. But this is not an average Joe kind of franchise, because it's, you know, ostensibly, it's those Transformer movies aren't even really made for people like you and me. In my opinion, they're going for the younger audience of people who like punch 'em ups and CGI and explosions. It doesn't have anything to do with loving the Transformers back in, you know, 1984 and watching it in syndication or whatever. So they're obviously going to, I mean, these movies still make money. That was the conversation that we had back last summer when this came out. And of course, we're trying to figure where this movie's going to land. I didn't think it was going to do well. You did, which is why you ultimately won our movie challenge. I think it rated. I didn't have it, or I had it somewhere lower. I might not have had it at all. But I know better now. Because people do kind of gobble this up, even though it's trash. You and I both disliked it. Or you said you thought it was okay, but boring. But I don't know. I don't know what that
better
means.
Than... I would say it's better than probably 80% of the Transformers film, and that's a low bar.
Very low bar. Yeah, I mean, the first film is just, it's actually...
Or better than 80%.
Yeah. I don't even recall seeing the other films, because I know it had something to do with... First of all, it's got Shia LaBeouf and what's-her-face Megan Fox, both of whom are canceled, I believe. So it's like part of a dead... And then later it moved into featuring Marky Mark as the main dude. So what else do you need to know? Does this have a chance? I think this has a chance to be on par with what I watched in that other movie, which was a big punch up, you know, and then you'll have jet fighters and tanks and explosions and the humans, maybe the humans that you and I both loathe so much in these movies will just be the G.I. Joe people. And they'll be, and they, you know,
they don't do anything.
And they could ostensibly somehow be more interesting than just regular people, because yeah, this last movie it was the guy, and it was, you know, the black woman, and they were both from Brooklyn, but she was also some kind of scientist who could use Transformer computers because she was a whiz or whatever. And I just, man, wow, it was exactly what you would expect.
Yeah, I mean, G.I. Joe brings, hopefully they take it more from a less like extreme, and they go more like gadgety James Bond. Like, they got cool gadgets,
right?
They're doing some cool stuff. They all have personalities, and they aren't wearing all, you know, black jumpsuits.
And again, I guess I never, beyond the fact that they're both Hasbro properties, never really understood how you connect the two, because G.I. Joe is supposed to be their counterterrorism unit, and they're fighting against, you know, not only Cobra, but other organizations like that around the world. And then there's the Transformers, which are robots that punch each other. But it's all kids stuff.
I mean, who's going to protect us? Who's going to protect us from robots?
You've got to have the. You got to have the. My camera's pointed the wrong way with my big Sky Striker over there. But all my G.I. Joe stuff is on the top shelf of my collection. So yeah, hopefully we'll get.
Charlie. We'll
get Zartan.
We'll get a young
Dreadnoks and.
Go goofy, go weird, go fun.
Mindbender. But hold off
on Serpentor until like you know the second one.
Yeah. But yeah, so in the first one, you just regular ones, but get your classics, Major Blood and Destro and the Baroness. And yeah, my. So anyway, this is been announced, which means it's probably 3 to 4 years away. I would imagine.
A couple years away.
Maybe they crank these out faster because they're, you know, so cheap and stupid.
Well, we're just doing the CGI now. Film, animated one this fall, so they don't have to put one out right away that's live action. So they probably buy them.
Right. And dog-legging into this is your, you know, when I have, let me see if I tilt over, because you remember I have this poster, and I gave you the counterpart poster that was the Transformers one. And again, those came, my mom used to work at a TV station that syndicated both of those shows, and I had both those posters, and they gave you the Transformers one, and you lost it. But anyway, I know you enjoyed it for a number of years. Oh,
it got damaged during a move. That's exactly right, you know, what happened.
I have several posters that we had a basement in one of the houses we lived in that flooded, and I lost some artwork that way. So that's fair. Yeah. That's fair. But anyway, the seminal Transformers event. This is not the 40th anniversary of the movie, but it's the 40th anniversary of the television show.
Of the franchise.
So tell me about the franchise. What's going on?
Yeah, so they're doing a cool event. This is not the movie. This is essentially they're taking episodes of the TV series, showing them on the big screen, which they've never done before. So essentially the first three episodes. And we, along with that, so that's kind of cool to begin with. It's going to be in theaters for like a couple of days, and it's going to be in my area, which is neat. But the cool part is they're bringing all the voice actors back, and they're going to do a table read we'll get to see. So essentially, we'll see them essentially doing the lines. You know, you got Peter Cullen, Frank Welker, a bunch of the other iconic voice actors. And that's neat because these are iconic voices. Rarely people have seen them do that work before. Yeah. And I'm excited for this. And it is a big celebration this year. There's a lot of, you know, goofy figures coming out. They're doing a lot of cross promotion for this. So I'm excited for it. And the fact is that we're also getting a Transformers animated film.
Right.
And it's been, you know, so long since we've had one on the big screen that this should be a lot of fun for Transformers fan like myself.
That's good. So you're going then. You found tickets or is playing near you?
I am going, and I'm probably going to take a few friends with me, which is good.
Nice.
But yeah, I just think this is fun. I mean, it's one of those things for my youth. I know what it is. It is goofy. It's not going to have aged well, but more of the feeling of this is something I've never seen on the big screen except for the movie
which was 28 years ago, or excuse me, it was 38 years ago, 1986.
Exactly. Yeah, and yeah, wow. You're basically what you're going to see is they're going to be a split screen for the pilot episode where you'll see the cartoon on one side, you'll see the voice actors doing it in real time.
How inside baseball? Well, that's fun. Yeah, I haven't even looked, but after I, you know, made April sit through that movie yesterday, I don't know that I could get her to sign off on going to see this, but who knows? Had G.I. Joe been more of a success.
You could just go Charlie.
Had G.I. Joe been more of a success, they, you know, probably could have parlayed this a couple of years ago into the anniversary of that franchise, yet not so much. Yeah. So anyway, but G.I. Joe is those comics right now are great. I've been enjoying the ones that they're putting out there. So, all right. Well, cool. And that is, let's see here, May 15, 18, and 19. And tickets are currently on
some
sale.
Random dates.
So check your local listings, as we always say.
Yeah, it's playing at a variety of different theaters, so most likely there's several different places in my area where I could see it, so check it out if you're interested.
Good deal. Well, all right, now this next story, I will admit, So I might have to lean on you to jump in and fill in some of the blanks. I think I, like everybody, started with Heroes when it was a big deal. And that show was on in the mid-aughts. I'm thinking 04, 05, around the same time as Lost. It was like that was the other big show at the time.
2006, 2010. That was
2010. Four years. And during a writer's strike. So obviously it was broken up a little bit. So, but Tim Kring, who is the creator, is shopping a new version of it and looking for a buyer. That's weird. Usually it's kind of the other way around. But it is what it is. But yeah, seeking a second revival of the 06 series because it did have a limited run of Heroes Reborn in 2015. So break it down for me. What's the premise of Heroes? Just tell me like I'm a four-year-old.
So Heroes was essentially imagine the world we are in, but people start having superpowers, and you find out it's because there's organizations that are creating them. So it's kind of a lot like X-Men and other things like that, like The Boys.
Yeah,
Vought. And then there's a secret agency who's trying to take them down. And then you've got like certain characters like Hiro, H-I-R-O, who's Japanese, can travel through time. And he's seen it and he knows that something bad is going to happen. And he has to save the cheerleader. If he saves the cheerleader,
like the
he'll save the world.
Just like the X-Men and Bishop and Cable and everything we're seeing on X-Men 97. Yeah.
So. Yeah, exactly. And then we also had, I'm blanking on his name, who played
Spock.
Tyler.
Yeah, it was J.J. Spock. Oh, my God, I can't remember his name either. Damn it.
I am blanking on his name, but he's really, a really good actor. He essentially had the ability to basically cut open people's skulls and take away their power. He was kind of like a serial killer, and he was gaining all these abilities. And that was kind of like the season one showdown.
Yeah.
Excellent season. Pretty cool. Really liked what they were doing. A lot of different great characters, a lot of different things. And then the quality fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
And now
writer's strike probably didn't help.
The strike ruined it.
Yep.
I don't know if it was a show that they really had much to say after the first one or in a way that was good.
Oh.
So I don't know.
Gotcha.
But I did enjoy what it was during the first season. And there was a Reborn, which was one season. Like they thought, well, we'll get it right this time. We'll, fix all the pieces and work.
Did so, not. Kind of like, I was going to say kind of like, what the hell's the one on Fox? Serenity or Firefly, where they, they had the one super short season. They're like, we'll get it back for a movie and that'll rekindle interest. And it just... Negatory, good
that
buddy.
That just doesn't work.
I know.
I mean, you had a small audience to begin with, and then you're saying, here's a movie where you had to see
the show that nobody saw
get any of it.
Because that's why it wasn't on. And the big issue with, to extend the metaphor with Firefly, is that something that's credited to really dragging it down is that a lot of the episodes were shown out of order. And then, in this world where things aren't streaming, if it airs and you're like, what the hell is, I don't get this because I don't know what's going on, you're not going to watch it again. And in a way, if those Nielsens don't show them ad dollars being generated, it's going to go bye-bye. So, interesting. Yeah. So, I mean,
and this is a show like Lost, Charlie. You couldn't even just pick it up because it was one overarching story. So if you missed the boat or the overarching story sucks, then you're not like, well, maybe the next episode will be good. No, because you're going to get more of those marches towards that end goal.
You don't even get the previously on and even a previously on can kind of do so much. So will this suffer the same fate, or because we're now in the streaming world, can someone say, hey, I watched this and perhaps, it's made in such a way that it's easier to be an access point. And someone can say, oh, I'll go back and watch the rest of the show and then really, really dig it. Or flip side of it is, because it got canceled, because it got not good, is there just no chance of this surviving?
I mean, ultimately has to. I don't know how they do this. Is it going to just be a reboot and they're going to do it again? Is it going to be like the Next Generation where you're hoping you've got compelling enough stories you're going to bring people in without those touch points?
Right.
I don't know. It's so hard. And this is, the series now, if this comes out in 2026, it'll be 20 years apart.
Wow, yeah.
And this is kind of footnote in time.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't hear like a lot of people calling for this to come back. Like, not a lot of nostalgia for this show.
Right.
Right. Yeah, this might be a fool's
game. Yeah, I mean, it was clearly very niche, which is why it didn't really survive. But, oh, well, we will find out. If it's being shopped around, I would imagine this is 3 to 5 years out. You know, because somebody has to snag it.
It's not going to be on NBC, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, if there's even an NBC in 5 years, sorry, any of my friends who still work in terrestrial television, but I would work on those resumes too. But anyway, big auteur that you love, Edgar Wright, is going to be directing an actor you love, Glenn Powell, Chad Radwell, in a new adaptation of Stephen King's The Running Man, a fantastic 1987 Arnold Schwarzenegger film. Arnie at the peak of his glory, where he played a guy who did some running. No, he was living in this future, which was probably like in the future, and it's 2009, and they made it in, you know, 1987. But hey, that life has devolved. Reality TV has devolved into a game show. If I'm just trying to remember the premise, it's not that hard. And it's enormously popular, but the thing that people really want to see is someone die on a reality TV show. Literally, not figuratively, because that happens figuratively all the time. If you've ever watched
these are criminals, essentially. Yeah. They had a chance to get their freedom back, and you know, they go to an island paradise if they won, essentially being killed by all of these over the top, like
Iceman. Serial.
Well, they're also like, yeah, all these weird, like, almost like video game bosses.
Right. Sub-Zero. then at the end, does he pull out your head, your skull with your spine still attached? Which was, by the way, going back to the Transformers movie, they did that more than once. That was a real leitmotif in the Transformers movie we watched. But the premise of the Arnold Schwarzenegger version of it is that wasn't it kind of like he got on the wrong bus or something, or he wasn't supposed to be there, and I'm not even supposed to be here today?
He was pretty much framed for something he didn't do.
Right.
And then, he teamed up with, was it Maria Conchita Alonso?
Yep.
Koto in it, and Richard Dawson from the Family Feud, the host. So good.
Now I want to go back and watch it.
That's right. Okay, so he Arnie played Captain Ben Richards, a police helicopter pilot, and they accidentally fired on he was ordered to open fire on all these protesters, but he refuses, and he is then subdued by his colleagues. The media blames Richard for shooting 60 people, sent to a prison labor camp.
Oh, there we go. This is a great, and I would have to look, but I'm sure this is streaming somewhere, but probably, especially since it's a Stephen King, and April is a huge Stephen King fan. I would love,
Richard Bachman, one of those odd ones, and it's, I believe the book is completely different than the movie.
It's from Bachman Turner Overdrive and Stephen King.
Which is, I think, why we're getting a different type of movie with Glenn Powell.
Yes,
that's the whole.
Yes, Glenn Powell, the star
Glenn Powell, who's one of my favorites.
Twisters and Anyone But You, and who is the boyfriend of Sydney Sweeney. Sorry, I just had a moment. He was in that movie with her, and then he was on that show. He was in Top Gun Maverick. He was in, and again, the Scream Queens. I refer to that show that you love so much. That was Scream Queens, right? Wasn't it? Where he was the frat boy?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, Chad Radwell, one of the best characters in TV. Charlie, I tell you, man, that is a show you should check out. It's so over the top.
I know we
so
watched fun. A bit, and I do remember Ariana Grande. The thing I remember that show, but Ariana Grande was an early character, and then the killer finally caught up with her and stabbed her. She's like, oh, and then she finishes a tweet, and then she dies. That's what I remember about that show. Oh my gosh. Oh, yeah.
That show, yeah.
Another announcement from CinemaCon. This will be fun. I like him. He plays action, but he also plays comedy. So yeah, who's to say? And like you said, if the book is such a radical departure, will Edgar Wright say, well, I really want to make it like the book, and it'll be totally different than the previous film? Will that alienate people, or will Glenn, you know, are we getting into the place where maybe Glenn Powell somehow becomes a bankable name, which we've gotten so far away from in movies in recent years, you know, like Indiana Jones last summer. Bankable names, you know, Tom Cruise might be the only one left to exist. I don't know.
We'll see. He's in Twisters, but I think what this brings into it is Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
I think that's where the magic happens, because he wouldn't sign up for this if he didn't see something where, like, this is going to be my take. It's going to be cool. There's been a movie by Greg that I haven't loved. What he's done. It doesn't always near the high heights, but I love everything he's done. And Glenn Powell is just charisma. He is, when you look up the dictionary for charisma, it's his picture. Dude is amazing. He carries himself.
That's Todd's not so secret crush, because you've hit it all here. So that's fun. No release date yet for this. 2025 seems awfully soon. I could see them cranking this out next year, because we're early in 2024, so how would this be impossible to
come in a year? Since there's already source material, they can make a script that's probably there and film it. End of the year or early 2026, maybe. Right. Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Sounds like fun. Well, you know that we will be talking about it over here. Well, all right. Well, that does it for the news. Well,
Charlie, you missed the story.
Oh, you know why I did that?
You just watched.
I skipped right over because I didn't have the link open, because it would just open into a video and I didn't want to look at that. But yes, it's funny. That's twice I've missed this, because this came out 5 days ago and I ended up seeing it on this full doc. I'm like, oh crap. I guess I did know they're coming out. So we have a trailer for Joker 2, La Falla Du, blah, 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 blah.
Good job.
You like that? I studied. My VRC in SFI lives in Quebec, so you know I practice my French. But anyway, yes, this is a sequel to the very popular, was it 2021? Maybe 2019 that this film came out, with Joaquin Phoenix doing a complete departure of any kind of the way the character has been portrayed, set in the 1970s. Playing essentially a very challenged individual on the mental side, maybe a little insane in the membrane. You find out that large portions of the film, by the time we get there, sorry about the spoilers, happen all inside his head. So like his supporting cast of his supportive girlfriend is not a real person, or is a real person that he's never actually talked to. And then the end of it, he does shoot Robert De Niro in the head on live TV, which is why he ends up in the insane asylum. And then what happens, Todd?
Oh, he escapes. So, and then it becomes like a very oddly, like, what is real, what is not.
Yeah.
But it is essentially, that's about one man wanting to be seen and struggling. And it definitely took a departure. I think the only thing we really had that linked the two, which I didn't think was even needed, was we did get Joker talking to a young Bruce Wayne.
Right.
Which was weird.
Totally.
Didn't really need it.
Yeah.
But in this is essentially, like you said, a sequel. The main cast is back. The director is back. But the big thing is, essentially, this is going to be a love story between both the Joker and Harley Quinn, apparently in a co-ed prison, which I found very
mental
fun.
Institution? Co-ed mental institution? Those could be co-ed, yeah. I guess.
And she seems to be the perfect match for him.
And of course, it's the superb Lady Gaga, who we all love. We all love Lady Gaga, don't we, folks?
And this is a little different, because typically we're used to, oh, the Joker is insane, and then he goes to the therapist and he essentially seduces her and makes her insane.
Right.
I think this is the first time where we basically say they essentially are sharing a sense of mental
unwellness,
illness,
yes,
that makes them see the world in kind of the same light. And it's even mentioned in here, Charlie, that folie à deux is defined as an identical or similar mental disorder affecting two or more individuals. It's a shared case of psychosis, which makes a lot of sense, because if this is going to be a musical, which they said it will have 15 songs, and in the background of this movie, where we get it looks like a Hollywood musical from like the 30s, 40s, it's playing What the World Needs Now.
Right. Oh, yeah. Burt Bacharach. Yeah.
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 Which is perfect. And this movie had a lot of cool scenes. You see them both eating up the cinema and the screen.
Yeah.
And then there's that scene at the end where they're between glass and she puts lipstick on the glass, and he has it look like the Joker smile. But yeah, I just think this could work.
Yeah.
And I was worried that it was going to be, you know, and I don't think they would make a cash in, because it's not like it's like, oh, Mr. Freeze shows up and Batman shows up. No, it's going to be.
Well, he's crazy, so you just don't know.
yeah, it's going to be a further exploration. And
that, you know, that the Joker film wasn't an, it was an enormous hit for being something that was so dark. In particular, yes. I think it really stood up with the box Absolutely. Office on that. Was pretty substantive. That was one that we talked with our friend, the late, great Bobby Pauls, was our co-host on that episode. And we all really dug it. And we all really dug it. Loved it very
absolutely.
Much.
So, October 4th.
October 4th. So, yeah, that'll be our that'll be the kickoff spooky season. You better believe it. All right. Well, now I can actually end the news segment because the news is actually over. But I've got to get out that that Fuber app, that Feeble Uber app. Time to get down to the geek easy. Talk about things that we're enjoying. So let's do it.
With this ad. Hey, Secret Friends Unite, let me tell you about Zencastr. We use them for our show, and now they're supporting us. Zencastr is now the all-in-one solution making podcasting easy. It's the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. Provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content, all from one dashboard. Being a creator has never been easier. And we chose Zencastr because of the ease of use, high quality output, and it makes it super easy for our guests to come on. We had multiple solutions we tried before, and Zencastr has just been the best fit for us. Why Zencastr? It's now super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. Log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. Record studio-quality sounds and up to 4K video with your guests. Feel a sense of Zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. Have you ever worried what you sound like? Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording. It removes those awkward pauses in conversation too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with the click of a button. So if you're interested in making an easy, high-quality podcast just with the click of a browser button, go to Zencastr.com/pricing and use my code SFU1. You'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Now back to the show.
Talk nerdy to me. Talk nerdy to me.
We're sitting in the Geekeasy. Cover bands playing. Drinks are poured, and we are ready to get our nerd on. So I was lucky enough to score sneak preview tickets for a movie that is coming out this week.
Oh, that's why I haven't seen it. There we go.
Yeah, yeah. It's not in theaters yet. It'll be in theaters this Friday, and that is The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. I saw it with good friend of the show, Sean Nias. We met up for some drinks and went to see this movie. He was very excited for it because essentially it's a Guy Ritchie film, which you've probably seen. This kind of looks like The Dirty Dozen, the British version. Mm-hmm. And it is essentially based on a real story. That was finally just released in like the documents were unclassified, but Winston Churchill is right in the bombing, you know, like in London's getting killed in
1941.
And they're trying to get reinforcements and get the US into the war, but the German U-boats are essentially just like destroying anything that comes through the Atlantic. So the US isn't getting get involved until that's taken care of. And that's essentially what this movie is. Winston Churchill brings up a team who doesn't play fair to essentially take out the supply of U-boats and so the US can come through.
Nice.
Yes. This is a fun film. Guy Ritchie
is a fun film about the
fingerprints all over
the death of a bunch, but the death of bad guys, so it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got Henry Cavill's the major who leads this, and he assembles a team, you know, people with different abilities, which is great. And Alan Rickman is this, and he plays a Swede or a Dane. I can't remember. So he's putting on an accent.
Big old blonde head. Yeah.
Oh, and he is amazing in it. All of the cast, even the doctor from Discovery is in this, Charlie. He plays a pretty big role of it.
Wilson Cruz?
I believe that's his. No. You said Discovery. No, the doctor of Strange New World.
Batundu Adababundi. Sorry, I don't know the dude's name. I apologize. Sure. Black fella.
So he's in this. It's really fun. Cary always plays, you know, he's got a great British accent. He plays, well, he's in it as well. He's
British, I believe. Isn't he?
Yeah.
I think he is. Maybe not.
No, he's American. Yeah. Oh. He's American. Yeah. Yeah. He just puts on that accent when he needs
just
to.
Just like our boy, James.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Just look like our guy, James Marsden, always did so great being Spike on Buffy with that accent. And yes. He's just a regular old American.
He is British. Sorry, I lied.
I thought so.
I lied.
I thought
he was just really good at putting in a British accent. Oh well, Americans can't steal those jobs apparently.
Yeah.
But I will say this is a really fun film. I think it's chock full of action and adventure. It doesn't really slow down. I will say though, I thought it was going to peak a little more than it did. It was like Inglourious Basterds meets The Dirty Dozen.
Yeah.
I didn't think it had the panache or the dialogue of, you know, a Tarantino film, but not many things.
Yeah, boy, so. Inglourious Basterds, which I would think would be the nearest parallel, is one that I've never gone back and watched it again because I just thought in a lot of ways it was too silly, even though it was super, super violent. And it did this alt history thing where the bad guys killed Hitler. And I'm like, man, well, you know, where this is more of a period piece reflective of something that is, you know.
But this is also pretty damn silly.
Is it? But it isn't based upon true events, or is it actually? Like,
no, it is. It truly is. But the characters they bring in, like I say, are over the top.
Well, they're sure. Goofy. Yeah.
They're silly.
The Tarantino.
There's not a lot of
The Tarantino bit just seemed like, okay, well, you just made you made it in the Tarantino-averse, and it's like
And that's exactly what he's doing. Yeah, okay. And that movie, like his movies always have, they're like they have a flair for the dramatic.
The Hateful Eight.
They try to make.
The Django Unchained.
It's like Dawson's Creek. Yeah, it's like Dawson's Creek. You know how they made kids talk more like adults than they really do? It's like, kids don't.
They talk more like adults who don't sound like human beings. Yes, exactly.
But we had a blast. It was a lot of fun. And there is a nice showing at the end. I won't spoil, but just watch it because it's kind of fun to see how this all comes into reality.
Okay, so I wanted to.
There you go.
Good deal.
Yeah.
All right.
So and Fallout.
Yes. Amazonian on Amazon Prime. Yeah. You got it anyway.
Yep. So Fallout is now out on Amazon Prime, also including ads. So enjoy that.
What? Well, ours just really showed they have the little block at the beginning and that was it. Is yours different?
That's not common. Like I was watching Invincible.
Yeah.
I got a bunch of ads and it's like, oh, one of three ads.
Well, tell me you don't do Prime anymore? Do you do it like monthly?
No, I do Prime. Oh, Prime is, this is, I pay for Prime.
Must be a Minnesota thing. I don't know. I just know.
No. This Fallout did this is limited interruptions. But everything else on Prime is going to be every 15 minutes. You're going to get fun ads. So it's basically
what was old is new, because that's simply the way it has always been, and people can't stop bitching about it.
But I would say this is the only time that I've been watching something what I paid for. Now they're basically saying the thing you paid for, we're now adding ads to it. The rest of the services, here's the ad-free version. Do I want to pay for that or this?
Right.
So Amazon's doing it on the sly because we didn't sign up for ads, and now they're charging us for them. So.
But nobody's ever going to dump Amazon, at least because it's too seductive.
I don't know. How much is eventually Amazon Prime? It started like $70. Now it's like $130.
Yeah.
How much are you willing to pay for Amazon?
$2,000 to get your free shipping.
Exactly. And it's like, well, how much stuff do I need within 2 days? Yeah. You can still get 2 day shipping.
Did my wife going about that? That's how we get most of the shit in this house is Amazon.
Yes, Fallout. This is based on the video game series that's been around since the early 90s.
Yeah.
And
I was doing some research. I was curious.
Fallout is a world, not necessarily one story or one person.
Right.
It's post-apocalyptic. It's kind of got a whimsy of a 1950s aesthetic with technology that essentially gets halted in the 1950s. And now we're in this.
Well, I was interested. I'm like, well, did it really? It was about because what you find out later in later episodes, I'm not betraying too much. Perhaps this is somehow revealed in the games, is that time went forward from the 1950s because of Vault-Tec, but it's really about 1975 when what you see at the beginning of the first episode happens. 1975 in our time. It's not, because even if you notice, the 1950s style aesthetic of the car is a little different, and the house that they're at, there's a robot in it, so, which is of course the awesome,
correct, still black and white TV. Yeah. You have music of the time of the, right, 50s. There's no 70s rock. There's no,
right,
they say it's a 50s aesthetic.
Yeah, so yeah, the counterculture of the 60s and the 1970s, all that. So style kind of froze in the 1950s,
correct,
because, yeah, this, you know, certain things that were happening, you know, changed history as we know it. So there's little yeah, tips and
it's got that
tweaks,
pseudo 50s, what things look with, like they would be futuristic, like, yeah, the robots that are,
right,
there,
yeah, the Matt,
have that, like, the Robbie the robot,
great Matt Berry, yeah, robot snip snip. You see,
exactly. Yeah, so I mean, that's what we're essentially getting in this. And the world of Fallout, there are Fallout shelters, essentially
big vault
dwellers.
At least 30,
and there
33
are,
of them. Yeah.
Oh, there's more than that, Charlie, because, right, in another one of the games, it's Vault 111.
Oh my gosh.
So,
well,
there
you do end up seeing a map that shows them all over, yeah, the US. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So there are, and they are, each vault is connected between gates from the communities that are separate. They're ran separately, but they basically learn to communicate,
trade,
share resources,
yeah,
or make trades.
All wear
so
the same outfit.
Cool. And yeah, and essentially this show is, I don't want to give too much away, set essentially 200 years after
219 years, so
correct,
about the almost
the
year
is long enough,
yeah, almost the year 2300, so basically, yeah, yeah.
So they assume there's enough time, you know, that's one of the big things about this. They assume they need about 200 plus years before the radiation level to drop,
right.
So then and that's where the vault dwellers are seen as like the people that will then lead
because
basically making America great again.
Because they've been living down there and, you know, continue to educate themselves and work on their skills and their, you know, farming and doing all the stuff that's,
correct,
necessary to live underground, while whatever is up on the surface is Mad Max and people killing each other and,
yeah,
you know, remaining technology run amok. And then, you know, that is, the vault dwellers don't have any contact with the surface because it's evil and forbidden, so they don't really know anything.
No.
And then that's what you find as the series continues to evolve. Of course, we've all seen, you know, the trailer with the giant catfish that has little fingers in its mouth. And there's just a lot of really weird shit.
Two-headed cattle.
That you'll see, yeah.
Big old cockroaches.
Yeah.
Radiated bears.
Cockroaches as big as a golden retriever. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, yeah. The radiation, yeah, soaked bear. And they have these Iron Man suits that they call the Knights. And I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the Iron Brotherhood is basically,
right,
what they are.
That's your,
they're kind of a force, yeah, police force, who really are kind of based around almost like it's the Knights of the Round Table,
right,
or you know. So that's the thing that's cool about the world of Fallout is it's got many different parts to
little
it,
aspects
and
such, yeah.
Essentially, there's no core story.
Yeah,
and every game is a little bit different. Like Fallout 4. I believe the main, I don't want to get into it, but basically,
yeah,
every Fallout has a different storyline with a different protagonist.
Yeah.
And this one is doing its own thing, which is great, because no one can say, well, it wasn't like that in the game. Nope.
Because it's the world, not the game, which is, yeah, that's definitely the great,
correct,
approach.
Yeah.
Now, did you get, I'm trying, cause you watched the first two episodes and we've seen the whole thing. Did you get to the part where you find out who's in the first night suit that we run into?
Yes.
Yes. It's Michael Rapaport. Love it. He's so great.
Well, thank you for spoiling it.
Oh,
so
stop it.
Folks,
that's okay.
So we're only watching the first two,
yes,
episodes. Yeah. It's great cast.
Yep.
I like the lead is amazing because
Ella Purnell. Yeah. From Yellow
Jacket.
She's
like Sandra D. Yeah. She's kind of like Sandy from Grease.
But
she's highly trained and her catchphrase is, anytime she has to do something that's a little out of her wheelhouse, but she's okay to go do it, is okie dokie. And I love it. It's so cute.
She's fantastic.
So sweet.
We have have a supporting cast. We do have Kyle MacLachlan, so you have some recognizable faces. That's her father. We have another familiar actress who is a villainous character that we meet very early on.
Paul Griever.
Yeah. And I recognized her as one of the main characters, I think, in Jessica Jones. I had to go back and look her up. Yeah, Moldaver. But yeah, the way this unraveled all the way to the end, and when you find out what the real deal was with the vaults and who made the vaults and the tech and everything. And that was a bit of a surprise.
And I love Michael Emerson's in this.
Yes.
You know, Ben Linus from Lost.
Right.
Great in it.
You're right. Jim's limbs. I don't want to spoil it.
Who's the name of that lady who plays the grumpy old lady at the, like, you know, the store?
Oh, she's super familiar.
She's been in other things and kind of plays the same type of character.
Yeah, that's her. That's
an old crotch.
That's her shtick.
Crotchy lady.
An old crotch? Well, not quite.
An old crotch.
But no, that's fun. But yeah, so I would I would recommend this show to almost anyone because it's fun. And Amazon Prime, you've got it. You've got it anyway, so just turn it on, you know.
But it is adult. It is R-rated.
Very much so.
It's got language and exploding gore. Bodies, holes in bodies.
I mean, mutated things, this and that, and things get eaten. And yeah, and it's, yeah, just body parts flying everywhere. You don't want to do it. All right. Well, Todd, we talked about this trailer quite some time back, and I don't want to spoil this movie, but I really can't spoil this movie. But it was absolutely fantastic. So we have writer and director Alex Garland, who is a Brit, and I believe he's given us a string of kind of unusual films, one of which I cannot recall at this time. But this is Civil War, not the one with Captain America, but the one where we have Nick Offerman playing, and again, he's not actually a major character in the film, because this film is told through the eyes of four journalists, one of which is a cub photographer just getting their start. You got a grizzled photojournalist played by Kirsten Dunst, who has aged like the rest of us and looks like a normal person, does not look like a superstar beautiful model in this. An older associate of hers, who is a reporter, and then her main cohort, who is a younger reporter, who is going to interview this president who is under siege because the collective Western forces, which is Texas and California, having banded together, which just further fuels the absurdity, but not absurdity of this film. Like, how would Texas and California ever band together to do anything? Well, the thing is, this Nick Offerman character is apparently a despot to the key that, you know, in his now third term in presidency, you learn that he's disbanded the FBI and he's done a lot of other things that the American people just couldn't take it anymore. But it's not only Texas and California, it's also the Confederacy of Florida. If you even want to imagine what that looks like, that's terrifying to me.
mullets and gators.
And you know, I will say that a lot of the most poignant bits did end up in the trailer, like, you know, seeing Jesse Plemons as a trigger happy soldier ended up in the trailer. Powerfully scary film in so much that this could happen tomorrow, with everything going on in this country right now and what we're facing and the things people are saying on spots like Fox News or ONA or whatever it is. But incredibly well done. I do not want to say more, but you owe it to yourself to see it. You owe it to yourself to see it. It's an exceptional film. It's in theaters now. And did all right opening weekend. I think it had a $10 million opening weekend, which was a high for A24, which is a production company.
I thought it did like $25 million.
Oh, boy. I mean, maybe it was global. I don't know. Maybe it was global because people are more interested in or are equally as interested in it overseas because they're like,
I know it beat everything. It was number one.
I saw a $10 million figure, but maybe that was opening up.
$25 million,
nice.
Yeah, out
on a $50 million budget. So,
Charlie, I hope at this point though we don't see like people watching this film and think
taking notes.
Wow, they're like, oh, I believe that's the only way to save our country.
We're gonna do it. Yeah, we've got
to divide it
and go blow up Washington D.C., which is obviously it's the last act of the film. Which is, again, the trailer was. Gave us a lot of what we ended up seeing, but certainly the story in between. So definitely worth seeing, Todd. I would say go see it on one of your Tuesday movie nights, because definitely worth it. So, and then we finished The Wire and we're like, hey, we're kind of loving this gangster, you know, urban decay vibe. Let's watch something else, but maybe we'll find something a little bit more fun. And I've wanted to watch.
You didn't go to Oz and watch a prison men's.
It's so funny that you said that. We watched half an episode of Oz and then we turned it off. It just hasn't aged well. It just hasn't aged well. It's very.
Oh, yeah. It has a lot of cool actors in it. Yeah. But yeah.
J.K. Simmons, was in it. My soul brother from Grosse Pointe, J.K. Simmons. And then Ernie Hudson in one of the only TV roles that I'm aware of him was the warden. But yeah, we didn't really dig it. So I said, you know, a show that I've always wanted to see because I admire the lead is Atlanta, which is on FX, which is on Hulu, which means it's on Disney Plus now. Now, Disney Plus has just gotten really weird for me because that's how we're watching it. And I toggle between, I'm also rewatching Clone Wars, and then I'll go back to Atlanta. And then you can also find, you know, Bluey further down the road. It's a weird connection of stuff. But kind of a cool show. Donald Sutherland is Ernest, or Ern, as everyone calls him. His cousin's name is Alfred, or Paperboy. He's an Atlanta rapper. And the third guy in their little trio, and I can't remember the actor's name, starred in that Dear White People movie where he's a black telemarketer who can do white voice that came about 4 or 5 years ago that I enjoyed. But that's what I remember him from. But it's a farcical series, man. Ern is also, he's got a baby mama and a little baby girl, and they're just into, like,
what does Ern do? Is he just like a friend of a friend?
He's the cousin to Paperboy, and he's trying to be his agent. His agent manager. Oh, okay. And it's like, you know, it's Black Seinfeld. I don't know. They're getting into.
Wait, is this Black Entourage?
Yeah. I'm going to call it Black Seinfeld because they're always getting into ridiculous.
Are they going to make a Black Lightning film? Like Aquaman with what's his name?
Yeah, right. Or Black bring back Dolomite. I don't know. But anyway, it's fun. We just finished season one of 5 seasons, and it's like a total of like 45 episodes, or, you know, 22 minutes. And so it's fun, and it makes me chuckle. If you don't like bad language, particularly use of the N-word, this show is not for you, because there's about 40 occurrences of it in every 22-minute episode, which is 2 or 3 a minute. Maybe 5 or 6 a minute. But it seems real gritty. But again, there's, like, you know, the episode I was watching right before we came down here, you know, a guy stormed into a fast food place because it was a drug front. And when he turned around, the manager had an AK-47 and was shooting at him. So it's very gritty. In parts.
It's not like it doesn't have, is it so, but it's like a dramedy, right? It has some whimsy.
Yes, correct. Exactly. That's like, yeah. I said, it's, you know, it's Black Seinfeld with AK-47s and drugs and rap. Yeah, but it's, no, it's interesting. So yeah, I'd recommend that one. And again, on Hulu or on Disney Plus, which again is just very confusing if you're out there and, you know, watching Peppa Pig with your kids and flip over to watch Atlanta. It's all on the same toggle. Oh man, have you dabbled? Have you seen that show at all?
Yeah, I mean, people say it's good. I probably need to try it on an episode, see if it tags me. But nothing I've seen, like any of the trailers, I'm like, looks like.
If you enjoy Donald Glover,
nothing caught me.
Donald Glover, right? Is being Donald Glover, but less Community and more like from Spider-Man Homecoming, where he's like,
hey. So very. I don't like. I'm watching Community. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
More energetic and fun.
Yeah.
Versus the aloof, kind of
pretty much stoned.
Kinda, is he there? Is he really putting into it? I know he's like. I know he's talented, but to me, that has no appeal to me. I don't like people who put, like, their energy feels like.
I'm here. My lazy act. I'm over here.
Could have been an email.
Yeah. Why was this me?
But I mean,
this
maybe
podcast
it's
could have been an email. But yeah, it's great. And yeah, there's whimsy to it. There's not a lot of really strong emotional beats, you know, because again, he has a daughter and he's a baby mama. And sometimes they try to work it out, sometimes they don't. And so, you know, there's that amount of. So, you know, I don't know that one episode would cut it, but that, I mean, that's the place to start. You'll know if you have a spark. So, but anyway, yeah, as I said, again, Disney Plus or Hulu. I'm just watching everything on Disney Plus now, because again, I'm going through a Star Wars renaissance, because, you know, so I'm flipping between Star Wars stuff. So I'm on Disney Plus anyway. Yeah. Even though it's not one of the hot buttons on my Roku, I have to go to it manually. So much work.
The only bad thing about everything being one app now, it's going to be harder to find crap.
Right.
I mean, it just is. There's, you know, you've doubled the content.
Unless you know what you're looking for and you can just tell your voice remote what you want. Yeah. As far
correct.
As hook then looking you're just for stuff.
A lot of the same stuff.
Yeah.
Versus new stuff.
Which is, Todd, that's what people do. I know it's not what you do, but people tend to do that. Like, I can watch Ahsoka
it's
for the fifth time.
Too much stuff, man.
There is. And like you said, especially if it's all stacked, it's, you know, it's stacking stuff like cordwood. Anyway, all right. Well, that takes us out of the geek easy. I am done with this place. Tired of them spitting in my drink, so we are, again, not paying the tab. But I have my Air Qantas app open on my phone. Time to get down to Land Down Under. Hologram Tina and the mutants waiting for us, as always, to take on a fun topic. It's going to be crossover edition of Pitch Meeting. Let's make it happen.
Welcome to another edition of Thunderdome!
Thank you, Tina. We're sitting in the Thunderdome where the mutants have been gathered for a topic or game to be entertained. And this week we've got a game. It is Pitch Meeting Crossover Edition. Oh my goodness. Folks, if we play Pitch Meeting, we've done a couple different ways before. This one's going to be a little more simple, but is going to make it, I think, a little bit more interesting to see what each of us come up with. So I have picked two franchises that I said have a lot of synergy and they should be a movie. And Charlie gets to be the writer and producer that makes this happen. You know,
I accept no responsibility. What was that?
Exactly. So Charlie doesn't know what I'm going to give him as the franchises. Like I own these IP and I'm like, make me a movie. Let's make magic happen. So he is going to give me his pitch for these franchises. And then I will do the same when Charlie gives me his two franchises that he owns. How do we own these franchises? You don't need to worry about that.
It was a knife fight. Exactly. Studio knife fight.
Not at this point. No. So the two franchises that I own, Charlie, are Care Bears and Pez Dispensers.
Man. This could
pitch it to me.
This could not be easier. So we have a film that takes place in two very distinct portions, dividing a three-act story. So do the math on that one. We have the real world in the time when Pez dispensers were created. Let's just say it's the 1950s. Let's say Pez Dispensers was created in the 1950s. It's where it's Lincoln, Nebraska, and you have a couple of brothers, the Pezatorinsky brothers. They're immigrants, and they stumble upon this product with their last nickel that little square logs of candy can come out of a vertical tube that has the head of a popular character on. If it's the 50s, it's, you know, James Dean and Ricky Rouse and Super Dude and who else was big? Ricky Nelson Piz Dispenser. They're finally getting this going when we flash back to an alternative world, which is in the clouds or some shit like that. I can't remember where the Care Bears live. Maybe it was in a forest on a cloud, something of that nature. Why not? But what you don't know is that the Care Bears, besides just running around and shooting their like chest emblems onto people, which sounds vaguely kind of like sexual harassment. I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no, maybe not a kid's film. They're actually powerful sorcerers. So they're watching everything in, like, if you remember, like your typical, like maybe even in what I'm thinking of, Time Bandits, where the guy's like watching things happen in this murky puddle. And so they're watching everything happening on Earth with the Pez brothers, the Pezarazarinsky brothers, who just go by Pez. And what they're seeing is that all of these copyright lawyers are converging on, you know, Lincoln, Nebraska, or Omaha. Now I can't remember where I said it was. We'll say Lincoln. They're all converging on these lawyers with these, you know, they're going to take all their money away. They're going to lock these guys up. And the Care Bears are like, we have to traverse the Rainbow Bridge. So maybe they got to reach out to the folks in Asgard. But you know what? Again, they're about to do that, and then a copyright lawyer shows up, says you can't do that. So they've got to find another way. So they're going to have to construct, through the power of friendship and love, some kind of cross-dimensional portal. But at that same time, the unknown, who is that character from that terrible Willy Wonka thing that happened over in Denmark or wherever it is that just has the mask that comes out. He shows up. He's going to stop them. There's this huge CGI battle where, like, it's like that scene from Avengers where they all come out of the portals and they have to fight. It's just the unknown. So he's like Thanos, but he doesn't have any minions. He's just got his cloak and smoke and necromancer powers. They defeat him. And they manage to get back to their fortress where they're able to look into the dark cloud, their little seeing screen. And it's not too late. They can get to Earth and they can stop all the lawyers from taking the Pez brothers away for good. So the tunnel is completed. Obviously, time moves differently in these two perspectives. And it makes sense, the suspense of disbelief. The core Care Bear team manage to travel, and they arrive at the exact moment that all these lawyers are—they're closing in like the FBI, like a SWAT team. They're coming in, they're tumbling out of there, falling out of windows. One guy's popping up out of the floorboards, and they've all got their writs and seizures and cease and desist there, and they're about to just take these brothers down. And they're holding up their Pez dispensers, trying to defend themselves, but the Care Bears appear, and they shoot their load, so to speak, all over these lawyers. The power of friendship, love, and understanding. And the lawyers say, you know what? This is America. We will let you go with a warning. Just we want 95% of the cut of the business. And they said, you know what? That's more fair than we expected. Here's your money. And the movie's over. I'm waiting for the applause. You are stupefied. I love it.
I feel like I should be playing that clip for Billy Madison. We are dumber for being here.
My IQ went down by 5 points in the last 5 minutes. Oh, my goodness.
I don't even know what to say, Charlie. There was a lot of ideas.
There were some ideas. There were words that I spoke, and they were bespoke.
This feels like a movie that had been made in like Hungary and like that knockoff Avengers I saw. It's like, what IPs can we afford?
Oh my god.
Okay. We got the plot from the Super Mario Brothers movie from 1987.
I love it.
Use that.
You better believe it. All right. I've got yours, and it appeared to me in a vision within the last 10 seconds. Are you ready?
10 seconds ago.
Your Hold crossover.
On, let me write this down.
Your crossover is going to be the following. You're taking the NCIS franchise,
ooh,
and you're crossing it over with the board game Mousetrap.
Okay. Crap. How many NCISs are there now?
Let me see if I can rattle them off. There's Original Recipe. There's Hawaii. There was one with Scott Bakula in Louisiana. There Maryland? Is one in Australia now. There's the LA one with LL Cool J. I feel like that might be it, but I can get my mom on the phone if you want to find out for sure. I mean, phone a friend.
The hell happens on this show?
That's funny. They do that on other shows all the time. You want me to call her? I can do it.
No.
Okay, fine.
It's fine.
I'll get back. We're
going to have a live call-ins to this show.
Look for it.
What do you think?
Look for it on Threads.
Catch them on. Call number two.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, I have to hold the
phone.
All right. So NCIS and it's Mousetrap, not Mousetraps. You can't multiply. Okay, well. If you're going to multiply it, you're going to have to save it for the pitch. All right.
Okay, Charlie. So, you know, this is going to be interesting. So, we open on a dark, dank, rainy, and humid Louisiana night. We're in the bayou. Oh my goodness! There's crawdads and crocodiles coming.
Where are the crawdads eating
their beignets and drinking their
juleps,
their moonshine. Oh, Begora! And they look and they see a person. As this Geraldine is, you know, going from her house to the other house, she's stumbling around and she sees one of her buddies, Vern, and he's been killed by a giant mousetrap. Oh my God.
What?
But he happened to be a vice admiral of the Navy.
Oh, he's a senior officer. My goodness. Yeah.
So who else can only solve a crime when the Navy is somehow always involved? That's NCIS.
You bet.
NCIS coming to the
Spearing in there. And so this is the Scott Bakula version, so you got to get Scott Bakula back, even though that show got canceled.
Well, Scott Bakula has been quantum leaped, so he's not available.
Okay.
So we're bringing in
Mark Harmon,
a new detective to NCIS, and that's Tom from Tom and Jerry. Because who's going to catch a mouse, Charlie?
But does he have like a crazy backstory? Like,
or maybe it's Jerry, because I guess it makes more sense. Jerry,
well, he knows the mind. So, but if he's in NCIS, does he like have a grizzled backstory of how he like used to be in the Navy?
Well, actually, we're gonna use Steamboat Willie because he's public domain.
He was a captain.
And he's on the sea. Yeah, the steamboat is just going by, and they see him, but he's an old grizzled NCIS. You know, alumni, but he got out before they broke him. You know, he got out there on his retirement.
Wilder Valderrama. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they bring in Willie, and they have to figure out who is killing people with random traps.
And they're big mouse traps because it killed this admiral.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is like Acme Warehouse edition. And but then. We basically get a witty retort from Steamboat Willie when he sees the next victim, and it pans all the way over to Los Angeles, Charlie.
Wow.
They find same thing. This time it's Captain Crunch-a-Lot.
Captain Crunch, who is an admiral?
From the SS Good Taste. He was killed when a can of Raid was left aboard his ship and killed him.
Oh, my God. On the USS Good Taste.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. And so the two NCIS teams, you know, they start following track and they find out there's a common killer
in Hawaii.
Oh my goodness, Charlie.
Because that's where they go next. Right?
Oh my goodness. Yes. And so we have to then follow the cheese to the appropriate victim. And we end up finding out that there was a trademark to build a mousetrap amusement park. But it was killed off.
The trademark was killed?
The Milton Bradley Corporation over a minute was against it. We're not having a mousetrap exhibit. There's too much danger. And the creator of the Mousetrap Museum, we want to find out because we feel like these are the props that were going to be used in it. So they want to track him down and see who's to blame for these murders what's happening. So LL Cool J goes undercover
Cheesy Rat
dresses up as
You Ain't All That. That's one of his songs. Cheesy Rat, You Ain't All That.
Yes. And he dresses up like Five-O Mouskowitz.
Oh, another crossover. Somebody's getting sued.
Correct. Because he was an immigrant. He used to cover like the crime that was coming over from overseas from Europe. They brought him on too.
Yeah.
And he went undercover saying he wants to develop this idea. He's got backers to create the mousetrap experience. He's very excited about this. And then behind his shoulder, he sees when he's talking to Mr. Trappleton, a major mousetrap about ready to come down.
Major mousetrap.
And what is Five-O Mouskovich, a.k.a. LL Cool J do?
Raps.
He says, "You've taken the bait." And that ends. They arrest him, and they all go back, and they all sing a song by The Who.
Oh, which one? Boris the Spider?
Yeah. Pinball Wizard. It's a game.
Pinball Wizard. Oh, which goes all the way back to the beginning of the episode because Elton John covered that song, and there's an Elton John episode at the beginning of our episode, The Funeral for a Friend.
Exactly. They're going to steal from CIS with a song.
You better believe it.
So there you go, Charlie. A little synergy.
I mean, you know, and there's limitless opportunities for cameos. Maybe you get some old, like, JAG characters in there. So maybe David James Elliott shows up, or, you know, the guy with the one leg, Patrick Labourteaux, who is Bud, can show up, or any of those characters. The Admiral, maybe he's still around. Yeah.
Yep. And it's essentially then it opens up the board game crime collection.
Nice. So it's a cinematic universe.
Exactly. We could have the game of life. We could have
the game of life is the game of death.
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. That's fantastic. yeah, that's an idea that has some legs. Maybe four of them.
Like Cootie Bug?
Yeah.
Remember Cootie Bug? Oh. Draw the legs on Cootie Bug?
I'm thinking more Wacky Wall Walkers, just throw the shit against the wall. Much go. Okay. Got it. Very good. Oh, what a great bit of synergy. I love it. Cool. Cool and the gang. All right, folks, you can play this at home or you can play it socially on our Threads page. Jump on there or on our Secret Friends Unite Discord. I would love to have anybody listening to this jump onto one of our Discord channels and give us your version of the pitch meeting crossover edition. My goodness. Well, Todd, this is about the shortest show we've ever had, but you know what? We'll come back and do one twice as long next week. Just watch us. You can't stop us. But that's the show. Todd, where do people find you out there?
Well, you know what? I think the easiest way to find all the things we're doing in Seek Fringe tonight is check out our link tree on our socials.
Yes.
That's got everything.
It's all there.
Our Discord, everything around the sun. It's all in one place. Check that out everywhere we are. We'll put it on our, if we don't have it, we will probably need to put it on our website as well, but it's on our socials. We'll add it to, I think it's on our Facebook page and group. Mm-hmm. We'll add to the podcast page. And because that's a great way to have all of our contact resources in one spot. So check that out. But for me, at Teoxtra on Threads, on Twitter, and check me out.
Hanging out in the Disky Discord. Well, I am also on Threads trying to get better about that. It's C3 Carpenter. Spend a heck of a lot of time over at our Secret Friends Unite Discord, the coolest corner of Discord. Don't look it up. It's true. Spend a lot of my time working with my lovely wife and a lot of other great friends with Starfleet International. The USS Grand Petoskey is our chapter here in West Michigan. We have chapters all over Michigan and Eastern Canada as part of Region 13, which is I'm very privileged to be able to oversee that. But Starfleet International is global. We have chapters in every country around the world, and we are celebrating our 50th anniversary this year. So it's never a better time to go to sfi.org and check us out. I would be very happy to help you find a chapter and other Trekkers no matter where you're at. So with that, friends, as always, thank you for joining us. I'm going to tell you that sharing is caring. To keep on trucking.
Be the hero, not the villain.
In a truck, ha ha!
Care Bear Stare.
This podcast is part of the Secret Friends Unite podcasting network. Visit secretfriendsunite.com for more great shows, articles, news, reviews, and more. Secret Friends Unite podcasts are available on Apple, Google, Spotify, and other podcast services around the world. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can join us on Facebook or our new Discord server, or follow at Secret Friends U on Twitter. Please subscribe to Secret Friends Unite on YouTube and visit our merch store at tpublic.com. Just search Secret Friends Unite. Thanks for listening.